Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have Mikey and John joining me for a little recap of the Toledo game. Illinois escapes with a win, 30-28, dramatic fashion, as well as we'll get into a bit of a Kansas preview toward the end of the episode, give our predictions, give our player picks. But let's start with the recap. Like I said, Illinois got behind, got out early, then got behind, came storming back, and ultimately snuck out of there with a win at home against a non-conference first game of the year. Caleb Griffin gets it done with game-winning field goal. Where do you guys want to start with this one?
You know, during that game, I had so many emotions as I was watching it. And something I just want to point out to everybody listening is that Toledo is a very solid football team. And I know last year, you know, we ran away in the first game of the year against Wyoming. It wasn't even close. But this Toledo team, you know, I had to sit back and think about this. You know, they're probably one of the better offenses in the, you know, mid to lower Big Ten West. They're competing in the Big Ten West. It's probably one of the better offenses that we're going to see this year in terms of, you know, leadership and players that have been around their program. This was a team that's predicted to win the MAC. They won it last year. So although we won, right, which is most important, you know, I don't think, you know, I saw a lot of people, you know, saying, oh, we only won by two, you know, it was a close game to a MAC school. But I don't want people to miss the, you know, the sight that this is a solid football team and provided our team with a huge test in week one. And I do think we figured out our biggest unknown, which I'm sure we'll touch a lot on. And that is that Luke Altmyer can play football and he's really good. And he's very calm. He can make every throw on the field. And his receivers trust him. He trusts his receivers. So, you know, my, you know, long-winded answer here is that, you know, I wasn't, you know, mad that we didn't have a blowout. And I think this game will set us up well, not only going into the rest of the season, but going into, you know, Kansas on a Friday night.
Yeah, Mike, I couldn't agree more on your point about Toledo being a quality team. Full transparency, I was at a wedding for the entirety of that game, so I wasn't able to be super online or check anything other than, you know, watching the game on my phone. Shout out to my brother-in-law for hooking it up so I could watch the entirety of the game. But the one thing that I saw when I was checking either texts from a bunch of random people or checking Twitter, I saw like the whole thing about, oh, can't wait for basketball season. And I get it that we're fans. Fans is a derivative of fanatic. You know, you have crazy emotions. But to take a step back and understand that Toledo is probably a better team than Indiana was last year, and we lost to Indiana last year, ended up winning 8 games. Chill. Just like, it's okay for, you know, you to be pissed off, but to immediately just be like, oh, I can't wait for December and basketball season. Like, that's something that I was just like, okay, what are we doing here? But in terms of the game itself, obviously you don't want to see the work in the trenches be as subpar as it was. But if we've got something with Luke Altmyer where he can mask those deficiencies on the offensive line, and then you get some play in the secondary to pick up the defensive line, which I don't necessarily think is super emblematic of what's going to happen this season. I think it might happen again next week, and we'll touch on that later in terms of the style of offense that the boys are going to be seeing on Friday. But it's still one of those where there's a lot of positives to look at, a lot of negatives, a lot of penalties to clean up. But a win is a win is a win. It still counts the same, regardless if you won by 21 or if you won by 2.
Mikey, you actually texted us something after the game that I thought was rang very true. And that was that in years past, Illini teams lose that game by a score or two. Obviously, it's not the cleanest win of all time. He didn't come out, blow the doors off Toledo, but just to end up with that win in the win column, you know, how do you build on that? Or what does that mean going forward?
Yeah, I mean, truth be told, we, you know, 4 years ago, we'd lose that game by 14 plus points. And, you know, thinking back, you know, this game, we were down, what, 19-7.
Mm-hmm.
We came back, battled back, scored 21 straight points. It was 28-19. They kick a field goal. Then they score a touchdown. They're up with under 2 minutes to go, and we come back and win that game. So we've touched a lot on, you know, building a sustainable program, building that foundation that, you know, last year we hoped that that's what it would become. And having us win that game, you know, last weekend showed me that that foundation is there. And it's very reassuring as a fan. I think all the fans out there need to realize that not all wins are going to be pretty. You know, like look at Ohio State. They won by 20 points against a Big Ten team and their fans are pissed, right? So it's all about, you know, just thinking about where we've been and where we're at now. It's the first game of the season. You know, the guys haven't gone against another team in, you know, 9 months. So there's a lot of positives to take away from it, not only the game, but Illinois as a program. And I think, you know, Brett, Coach Bielema is getting our program to a foundation where we win these games. You know, it's not we're going out against a MAC team, one of the better MAC teams, and losing, or, you know, Vegas has us, you know, underdogs by 14 points. We're going out and we're winning these games. And that's, you know, extremely important if you want to build a steady foundation for a program.
I want to talk quickly about some of these positives. The first and probably biggest one, quarterback. I thought we saw a lot out of Luke Altmaier, you know, sneaky, not even sneaky fast. He was much faster than I was anticipating him to be. Elusive, seemed like he made pretty good decisions, except for one forced ball that was an interception, but he seemed to have a good sense of the pressure, know when to escape, know when to, you know, roll out and when to get rid of the ball. I thought his accuracy on those slant passes was good. I thought, you know, he had a very strong arm too. So it seems like he has all the tools. How do you guys feel about the quarterback position, you know, projecting out in the future?
Honestly, that was about as perfect an impression that you could make in a first go round for an Illinois quarterback. You touched on the interception. Even that, I'm not going to say it was good, but if you want to put on your orange and blue tinted glasses, I was impressed that he at least stepped into a throw where he had pressure in his face and tried to make something happen. Like that, I think, is the best thing that I saw from him, is the poise, the calmness, and the accuracy under pressure. His decision making was not so crazy that he was getting all out of sorts and that he only needed a clean pocket, because I think we saw that was like the Brandon Peters thing. He could create if he had a clean pocket. The Tommy DeVito thing is he had some slipperiness to him, but it wasn't so seamless. And the ease in which that Luke was able to sometimes just evade pressure and his feel within the pocket to step up or step to the side and still have his eyes downfield. It wasn't immediately, okay, I'm going to go run. But when he did, he still made plays. It was unbelievable. His arm strength, like you said, Danny, it was great to see how he could put as much force behind the ball as he could in certain situations, but that he also had the touch when he needed to be, and that they were accurate. Even the back shoulder to Malik Elzey, that was one of those where, you know, you like seeing him take a shot and give his big receivers a chance, stuff like that. Or, you know, there was an incompletion where he was rolling to the sideline and he just kind of it looked, I don't want to say NFL-esque, but throwing off platform down the sideline to Isaiah Williams, and, you know, it was incomplete, but it was about as great of an incompletion as you could get. Those are the types of things that we have just not seen from an Illini quarterback consistently happen during the course of a game. Yes, the caveat can maybe be that it was a MAC defense, but you can still build from that, and hopefully that'll become something that springboards him to, you know, Big Ten West play.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sitting here listening to our conversations, we're definitely drinking the orange and blue.
Oh yeah.
Kool-Aid. There are some, you know, negatives that we will for sure point out. But the quarterback position is such a mental game, right? You see guys, I mean, even at the highest level in the NFL, that get into funks, and it's tough to get out of a funk. So what impressed me the most, or I guess what excites me the most, is that Luke played very well And we say very well, I think he only threw for 211 yards or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But he just looked calm. He looked like a guy who started all last season, you know, but who would know it was, what, his second or third career start? So that, you know, should give him the confidence going into next week to know that, you know, there's a reason he was this highly touted recruit. He can go, you know, lead a team on the road, play well, and ultimately win us games down the line. So yes, he made some poor decisions that throw into triple coverage. John, I know you said you liked how he stepped up into it, but I'm sure he would want to have that back.
Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to find anything.
Yeah, no, certainly. And he had some couple, you know, far hash out throws that were just on the money. And that's, you know, the hardest throw in football. And to see him do that with ease, you know, gets me excited because I think he is the future of Illinois. And I think we go as far as he takes us. I'm ready to say that now. You know, I know it's
one game in,
but he showed me enough to where, you know, as a former receiver, you know, there's quarterbacks you like, there's quarterbacks you don't like. He is a receiver friendly quarterback. He puts the ball where you can go catch it and go make a play. And, you know, our receiver showed that. And he put it right on the money. So I'm definitely, you know, fans should be excited for Luke Altmyer. I think I texted you guys that I was going to buy his jersey. So you might see me rocking an Altmyer jersey in 2 weeks against Penn State.
Get that NIL money. I will add one more point. I looked at, there was a list of top QBRs of the week, and he was up there. He wasn't top 25 or top 20, but he was close. And I decided to go cherry pick, you know, a handful of guys at random off that list. And I went and watched the film, like the extended highlights. And a lot of those guys that had better QBRs, just based off the eye test alone, they don't have the same zip on their arm. You know, they made a couple good passes, but there were a lot of floating balls. They weren't tucking and running as effectively. Based off the eye test alone, just skimming that list and looking at some of the names, he's up there, has the talent to be amongst some of those top quarterbacks. It's not to say he's going to do that, but I think he has the tools to do it. And one other point, John knows this because I wouldn't shut up about it. I probably texted him three times. There was one specific play I saw at the 4 minute mark of the third quarter that showcased what I think is his football intelligence or awareness, but he had like a trip bunch formation, right? He sent them out. All three of them shifted out wide. He was able to see what the defense was in, and then he sent Josh McCray in motion, and there was a miscommunication by the defense. They didn't know who was picking up who. He quickly recognized it, and he had Casey Washington on an inside slant route to his left, and because he knew that those two were miscommunicating, they both vacated the middle of the field. He just quickly didn't even think about it, hit Casey Washington for a 10-yard pass, and it, like, seeing that on display, I'm sure John, I know you're talking about potentially breaking some film down, but that might be a play that we highlight. But seeing something like that, the intelligence there too, coupled with the tools and the arm, has me very, very excited about Luke Altmyer for the future.
Oh yeah. I can't wait to break down some Luke Altmyer film. I'm currently working on obtaining some credentials to get into the film game. But that's definitely something that, it makes it a lot easier when you're critiquing great quarterback play like that. And my last thing that I wanted to say about that, and Mike, you kind of touched on it, but in terms of just, and even piggybacking off that point, Dan, that you were saying in terms of him relative to other quarterbacks, he showed that, I think a lot of people were looking for, is this the guy who sat for 2 years at an SEC program and may just be a cast off? Or is this the kid that had with a 4-star who had a Bama offer? And he looked more like the kid who had a Bama offer. And even to go as far as down multiple scores and just staying even keeled and not trying to get a 12-point play on one play or do too much, he took what the defense gave him while still making the right reads, still getting chunk plays with his legs. It was about as assuring as you can get. That's just my main takeaway. And I'm so excited to have him. And even, I know we talked about, or I don't know if we talked about on the podcast, I know we mentioned Avery Jones in terms of comparing him to, you know, a Josh Kreutz, but I'm also going to be looking very hard at that West Lafayette quarterback and comparing him to Luke Altmyer, because that's something where, you know, sometimes you just get the right guy in the right spot at the right time. And I'm hoping Luke Altmaier's that guy.
There was another point in the game. I want to find Mikey's exact text because it was very funny. But Illinois, classic fashion, goes down 19-7. Looks like we're still in it. We're driving. And Luke Altmaier throws that interception. And all of a sudden, you're down 19-7. You turn the ball over. Mikey texts us, "I might be hanging up the mic, boys. It's been a fun ride." And I feel like everyone can relate to that because in that moment, it was like, man, we are going to get the doors blown off us against Toledo at home in our debut. This is ugly. And then Miles Scott, wide receiver turned safety, like three or four plays later, picks one off and then takes it to the house, completely changing the tenor of the game and just injecting life into the team. That's, in my opinion, the biggest play of the game. But I'm curious if you guys would agree with that.
Yeah. Definitely. And there's arguments for Casey Washington's fourth down catch. Yeah. But without Miles Scott's play, we're not even in that position. Let's be honest. The crowd was out of it. You know, you could see the team just slowly falling apart. It seemed like Toledo could get all they want against us. So without Miles Scott's pick six, I don't think we win that football game. Just in terms of where things were at. And I was so down. I was so jacked for this game. We go down, we score on the first possession. And then, you know, just down 19-7 in the third quarter, throw a pick. I thought, okay, because I'm always the, you know, half full kind of guy or half empty kind of guy, especially when it comes to Illinois football. So I was down, but I think, Dan, I think you responded with that to that text and said, like, just deep breaths or something.
Yeah.
And it calmed me down. The next thing you know, pick six, and I was right back in it. But no, talk about a emotional game from probably everybody watching it.
I mean, Miles Scott just continuing on the tradition of converted wide receivers making big plays at free safety. Yeah, Kirby Joseph, Kendall Smith, and now Miles Scott, just first game. I'm glad that I wasn't like such a hater in the preview podcast. I know I kind of touched on maybe being that, but I mean, what he's doing that entire game, even just going out there and showing out as a free safety, you gotta love it.
Hindsight, would Mikey have been a first round NFL pick if he had converted to safety at some point during his career?
We know his intramural stats reflect a lot of interceptions, so maybe he had the sauce.
No, true. I don't think I got that that dog in me to go out there and just full force hit someone. But who knows? You know, if that's what I did full time, maybe I would have been pretty good at it. But I don't think so.
All right, we've talked a lot of the positives. I hate to bring up some of the negatives, but I think we do ourselves a disservice if we don't touch on things we're concerned with. To me,
yes.
Biggest thing I'd like to see improvement on. O-line and D-line play was not nearly what we had thought it would be. And I get it's one game, but are you guys concerned at all having seen that in this first game?
No, I'm not.
Where are you at on the panic level? 1 to 10, 10 being, yes, I'm really worried. 1 being, no, I'm not concerned whatsoever.
I'm probably a 3 or 4, maybe.
Okay.
That might even be high. I'll start with the defense. You know, we have two All-Americans back there, two guys that have done it. They've showed us they could do it. You know, they're going into their final seasons this year. First game of the season, let them get some of the, you know, wrinkles out. They'll come back. They'll, you know, fix what they need to. But they were exposed. And I'm not sure if I mentioned this to you guys, but I felt like we were losing a lot on first down, and you know, that's a, you know, stat that doesn't get enough attention, but when an offense is, you know, in second and medium or second and short, it completely opens up the playbook because, you know, you can take chances and throw bombs or throw, you know, intermediate routes because, you know, you're coming back, it's third and four, right? So then you still have a manageable third down. That's what disappointed me the most. I felt like they were just getting whatever they wanted on first down. And a lot of that had to do with our defensive line, just not getting pressure. There's a lot of holes. When they would run the ball, when the quarterback would scramble, he, you know, would scramble at will and, you know, all over the field. But I'm not worried, Dan, to answer your question, long-winded answer. Our defensive line will be just fine. And I think the same with our offensive line. We return a lot of experience on both sides of the ball. And offensive line is something where, you know, we have two new starters there. And it takes a bit of time for them to become comfortable with each other, because, and a lot of people don't realize, offensive line is one of the more mental positions on the field. There's checks based off alignments. There's a lot of stuff going on the offensive line. So putting a fresh group out there, two new guys, you know, they'll get it cleaned up. I'm not worried about it. And it's good that we came away with the win in the end. You know, we have all these things that we can correct, but we still came away with the win.
I couldn't agree more in terms of the level of concern. I would say on the offensive line, I probably mirror that with like a 3 or a 4. I think on the defensive line, I probably go to a 1 or 2, only because, and honestly, I'm going to give them another grace period this week, just because Kansas is going to look much of the same. You saw a lot of things in terms of Johnny and Keith were playing a bit more, I don't want to say on their heels. They weren't playing as aggressive as we're used to, in my opinion. And I only give it a once over in terms of rewatching it. So maybe I'm not too clued in. Obviously, I don't know all the defensive calls, but even this upcoming week against Kansas, it's probably more the name of the game is going to be contain Jalen Daniels. And it's probably going to be more of, okay, you're not going to be rushing the passers as hard or trying to get a feel as much, because there's a lot of creativity and misdirection and you got to worry about the quarterback. So I don't know if I'm necessarily going to write off the two studs in your defensive interior and also the outside linebackers. But at the same time, it's one of those where you still need to see better results. I can't, I guess, completely. So I'll go with a 2, but hopefully they have a huge outbreak this week and completely contain Kansas. And if they don't, then they better be loaded for bear against Penn State. And then we better see something unleashed and their coming out party, so that All-American status, that all Big Ten preseason list, all that can then be fulfilled. Because at a certain point, you know, you can look at those awards and watch lists or wish lists, but you got to produce.
I agree. On the D-line side, it was like, we've seen production from those guys. We know what they're capable of. Mm-hmm. I'm not too concerned they can't produce. What I was maybe a little more concerned by, and if this trend continues, is, like you said, John, we weren't ultra aggressive. And I don't know how much of that was, hey, this quarterback can run. If we pressure him and he escapes, we're in trouble. Let's play conservatively. I don't know if that's, hey, we don't trust our defensive backs as much, so we're going to give them the extra help by not sending, you know, 5 or 6 at the quarterback. And to me, I was thinking like, all right, well, if Johnny Newton and Keith Randolph are getting double teamed, of course they're going to have trouble getting through and breaking through the offensive line. So I don't know if that's a new trend moving forward, that Aaron Henry's playing a more conservative, you know, sit back defense, or if that's just dependent on the matchup. But it seemed like to me he was trying to give the secondary a little extra help by not sending the extra pressure. And maybe it works the other way. If you send more pressure, the secondary doesn't have to defend for as long. So I'm not sure the right way to play it, but that seemed to be, to me, what the recipe was. And that's kind of why I felt like we didn't see results.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with both your comments. And another thing that I just wanted to bring up about the defense in general, which I'm sure is on everybody's mind, is the penalties.
Oh, yeah.
I was harping, you know, in our season preview, Toledo preview episode, about the importance of having a mature senior linebacker like Tariq Barnes. And I didn't see the replay. I don't know what he did, but that first or second drive when they were 3rd and long and then he gets the personal foul first, you know.
I looked at the replay because you could barely see what was going on. You couldn't see the full where they actually threw the flag. But from the entirety of the play, he seemed to be tied up, and I think he took exception. The O-lineman was grabbing his shoulder and had a grip on him, and he kind of pushed back, and then the O-line shoved him, and they were shoving back and forth, and then it cut to the replay downfield where you couldn't really see it, but it looked like there was some sort of just shoving match going on that probably ended with a Tariq Barnes punch or slap or something that got called. But yeah, right, you can't have that
too.
Right in front
of that. Was a fresh, they were right in front of that umpire that sits right there at like linebacker depth. Like he was just looking right at it. I don't know what it was, but you just can't do that.
Can't do it.
Yeah. And that hurts teams. You can't beat yourself. You know, you can't do that. And you wouldn't expect that out of a guy, you know, who's been a starter, who's team captain. But silver lining in all this, you know, still had 100 yards and penalties. You know, got out yardaged, out passed, out rushed, you know, you name it, time of possession, third down conversions, and we still won the game. So coaches will be able to fix this stuff.
I have a theory on the Gabe Akis penalty there at the in the final drive, and oh, I mean, gosh, we only got the one angle, which was really frustrating because you couldn't quite tell, but from my opinion, at least, and I'm not trying to absolve him of anything, but the way he got blocked, it looked like he kind of got, you know, pulled down towards the quarterback's feet. And because he was, you know, on the ground / kneeling or whatever, he didn't get his head up. He didn't know that the quarterback had gotten rid of the ball. So then he just lunges after him because he was still seeing, you know, feet moving. And this guy is obviously an ultra athlete. So anytime you can get hands on him, I don't know, it's still not something that should happen. You should try and get eyes, and maybe he was frustrated because of the block. I don't know, but that just you can't have it. But if there's any way to absolve him of that, even a tiny bit, maybe that's it. But yeah, just untimely penalties. You can't have that many. The football games are lost more than they're won. It's a very old cliche, but it also rings true in moments like this where, you know, you almost gave away a game where you practically dominated because you just kept letting them extend drives.
Yeah, I agree. To me, it looked like it was hard to tell from that high up above angle, but he seemed to have been tripped or pushed or something where he was falling toward the quarterback already. And like you said, not necessarily an excuse, but I don't think that's a problem that lingers. I do want to talk about the final drive. Question for you guys, because in real time, I was almost thinking don't play for the field goal. I don't trust college special teams as much as I like Caleb Griffin and have confidence in Caleb Griffin. Leaving it up to college special teams is always leaving it up to chance, in my opinion, even if it's a, you know, middle of the field, 25, 30 yard field goal.
Yeah.
Did you like the strategy of, I mean, after the big catch, we talked about Casey Washington reeling that in. We got up, we kind of pushed on, ran it a few times, got it to the middle of the field. And then rather than had a couple timeouts in pocket, rather than trying to punch it in, we played for that field goal. Were you okay with that strategy? Would you have done it differently?
I liked that strategy. And again, I would still give that answer, honest to God, even if we would have shanked the kick.
Okay.
I think that's the right play, in my opinion. You're more often to, you know, have a crazy turnover than you are to miss a 25-yard field goal. Let's be honest. And our kicker, you know, maybe my answer changes if it's, you know, the freshman kicker from Naperville is our starter, you know, but here's Caleb Griffin. He's in his 12th year in the program. You know, he's got experience. He's got a leg. He's made big kicks. You know, he's a leader in the locker room. Guys trust him. The team trusts him. And that specific play, field goal and extra point, they rep so many times throughout fall camp and during the week, because it seems, you know, easy, but there's a lot that goes into it in terms of the line. You know, one lineman messes up where his foot goes at the ball snap, and that rusher's getting through and blocking it. So all 11 guys really have to do their part. But I think that was the right play. Again, it went in, so that's the easy answer. But I would do that, you know, 10 out of 10 times.
I agree, Mikey. Maybe I'm still too hurt by Indiana last year, but I would have been okay if Reggie Love scores on that third down conversion. If he breaks that tackle, then go in the end zone. You don't pass up an opportunity to take a touchdown to take the lead. I think that that's obvious. And it might have gotten a little scary there with about, you know, a minute-ish left or however long there was. And like I said, maybe we have flashbacks to Indiana, and I don't love that. But once you get down and you have control of, you know, the field position, the clock, it's all in your hands and you're the aggressor, it sends a wave of confidence over the team that I don't think then that kick, although still very pressure filled, it's not quite as detrimental as if they had not gotten that third down conversion. And then you're having Caleb Griffin attempt, you know, a 40 yarder from the right hash with about a minute left and you're hoping that he makes it. So I think that the simple answer is yes, even though there is some nuance to it, you still do that where you know, take the kneel and make it like an extra point. But I do understand. Yeah, it's there is the, you know, hashtag college special teams, and that can, you see enough of these missed kicks that yes, it is worth asking.
Shout out Hugh Robertson on the hold. Looked like the snap was just a little high. He caught it, brought it down, calm hands. Caleb got it done. So big plays all around. Illinois sneaks out of there with a win. Any final points? We didn't touch much on Pat Bryant, who Mikey's pick of the week was a stud. I thought one other note I had was the first drive of the game was just beautiful play calling by Barry Lunney. That's often the scripted portion. Mikey, maybe talk to that a little bit.
Yeah. So typically the first, and again, I had what, 4 offensive coordinators. So the scripts are typically 15 to 20 plays. And that's why teams tend to do well on their first couple of drives, or at least move the ball. Because, you know, those are the, you rep those, you know what's coming. They're all set up. It's weird. They are always the perfect play to call in every situation. You know, obviously if you get a turnover and, you know, run the ball back to the 5-yard line, you're going to call something different. But more often than not, that's not the case. So these scripted plays should be perfect. That's why, you know, like coming into the game or coming out of halftime, when teams like will call a timeout on their first play, it's like everyone in the whole locker room knows what play it is. Why are you calling a timeout? You always hear the announcers say like those just kill coaches because you've repped it so many times. But I thought that first drive, it got a little bit of everybody involved. And I thought it was just a beautiful call, play calling by Barry Lunney. And I liked the first play of the game to get Luke settled in with that little pop pass to Tip. I thought that was great. Great on his, you know, job as a coach to settle in his quarterback.
Also, the wrinkle with the Isaiah pop pass counter. Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. Beautiful. That makes me feel things that I didn't know were possible to feel, because that is just... And that, you get a good quarterback, Casey Washington had his moment. Pat Bryant was a stud. Isaiah Williams was just consistently making plays. Tip Ryman got involved early. The offensive line can get better. Reggie Love just loves yards after contact. Dude just doesn't go down on the first hit. Josh McCray scored. Like, there's enough good things there. There's a lot that needs to be corrected, especially on the offensive line. But we trust Bart Miller. And those guys get enough reps and they'll eventually become a cohesive enough unit that, and even if the depth is tested, you know, guys got meaningful reps in that game situation. I mean, it wasn't necessarily pretty at all times, but I just, Barry Lunney, that was, we won't talk about the 2-point play because having outside pass or short passes to the outside or outside stretch runs or anything to the edge, to the short side of the field will always drive me up a freaking wall. But everything else, great. We love it.
That was an all-time, man, that would have been sweet if it worked, but we look like fools for pitching it back. And like the creativity. I just don't like the execution. Like you said, John, going to the short side of the field when you need as much field as possible for that play was a little bit of a head scratcher for me. But all in all, I think we're feeling fortunate to have escaped with the win. I will say the predictive stats, the nerds, they thought Illinois played well enough to, I think I saw an 82% post-game win expectancy. So the predictive stats were in our favor, which is always a good thing. And there's a lot to build on. So I think we can take those positives away.
One last point. Dan, I think you mentioned this or tweeted from our, someone tweeted from our account, 4 for 4 in the red zone. And I'm counting Caleb Griffin's as a touchdown. That's huge.
Yeah.
Teams that score touchdowns in the red zone win. And last year we didn't prove to be able to do that. So that was huge. 4 for 4 in the red zone, you know, music to my ears.
Agreed completely. That's probably why the predictive stats liked us. Execution in the red zone is certainly a factor in that. And like you said, last year that was a big issue. So to see that in game one is encouraging. Hopefully that's a trend we see continue into week two. Segue for you guys.
Woo! Look at that segue.
Friday night, Kansas, who in my opinion is almost like the Illinois of the Big 12. Like, I feel like it's a very similar program. You almost look yourselves in the mirror. You have a third-year coach, a guy who we almost looked at hiring. You have a pretty good quarterback. There's a lot of similarities between these two programs. So I think it's going to be a very good test. And you look at the Vegas line of Kansas being a three-point favorite. A lot of times they say home field is a three-point advantage. So you're looking at two teams that are pretty evenly matched here. Do you guys want to get into this matchup? John, I'll let you have the floor.
Yeah, I know that Vegas had Illinois favored preseason in terms of look ahead lines. And now it's flipped, mainly due to the performance against the Toledo team that, as we mentioned, pretty good. They played an FCS team that there's not enough signal from those kind of games. You had your backup quarterback in. You know, they took care of business. I'm not going to say that it was a bad win for Kansas, but at the same time, it's one of those where I don't really know if it's flipped. Let's say you said it was 3 points. So let's say they were 4 points. So it's flipped a touchdown essentially based on one game. I don't know if it's quite gone that far, but I agree that it's a fairly close game in terms of the matchup. You have a first year defensive coordinator going up against one of the most creative offenses that you're going to see. They do a lot of fun stuff offensively in terms of motions and counters and movements. They have a lot of talent as well. They don't quite have the hosses up front on the offensive line. I know they return a lot on their offense in general, especially on the offensive line. I don't know if that necessarily is predictive of them being anything special on the offensive line. I still think that the defensive line can take advantage of that. They shouldn't be able to run all over you for, you know, 200, 250 yards, but it's going to be a challenge because they are so creative. I'm hoping, well, actually it's not that something I hope. I know that the moment that they could get their hands on the Kansas film copy that Jim Leonard was dissecting that to find some kind of creative counter to whatever creative schemes they've had that they showed in that first game. The injury to Jalen Daniels is significant in the sense that he's obviously a special talent, Big 12 preseason player of the year. It's not to be understated how good he is and how essential he was to them getting to a bowl game last year for the first time in ever, and them getting on game day, I think, or whatever. There was a bunch of fanfare about Kansas because they started 5-0 last year. He is the main reason because of that, but back injuries are not necessarily something that just go away. And maybe it's just a play through the pain thing and he can't make it much worse, but that's still something in the back of his mind. And I'm not trying to be Mr. Greg Williams out here, and I know that the Illinois staff would never talk about anything like this, but there's still something to be known about. Yeah, if you get a chance, you get your hit on him because you want him to feel, you know, that first game action that he's got in terms of coming back from an injury, getting his first live reps. So I think that it fares well in terms of the matchup if Luke Altmyer can do that again and the defense shores up the mistakes and the penalties and the defensive line plays better. I think it bodes well for the Illini, but going into Lawrence, your first road test, it's always going to be tough.
Yeah, I know Kansas is returning a ton of starters. It's a very experienced team. Mikey, I guess question for you on that front is, early in the season, how much of an advantage is it when you have a team that returns a ton of starters versus a team that's breaking in a lot of new guys? And at what point do you think the scale starts tipping more evenly in terms of a newer team versus an older team? How long does it take to break in new guys?
Yeah, that's a great question. And typically I would say, you know, well, one, now with the transfer portal now, you know, you're getting guys that have experience coming in and playing right away. Our team back in 2017, when we started the most true freshman ever, or at least for that year, there's a huge learning curve. Now, when you have guys that have played in other programs who've already gone through that learning curve, they know what to expect. They know what it's like playing on the big stage. It's a little different there. But in terms of returning people that were within the program versus not, you know, I would have said it was an advantage until I watched the Colorado game this past weekend, and those guys looked like they all been playing together for years. But certainly a quarterback that's been in the system, you know, he's the big man on campus. That's huge. And, you know, John, you mentioned back injuries are not something that, you know, you want to play around with, especially against a non-conference opponent when you're chasing the Big 12 title this year. You know, those conference games really matter. So if there's any risk of him, you know, re-injuring and being out for the season, you know, I don't know that they take it. I mean, he's a competitor, right? He's going to play if he's healthy, but at the same time, it's, you know, what's more important, beating Illinois or winning the Big 12? And you're not doing it without a guy, like Jalen Daniels, in my opinion. That team goes as far as he can play and as, you know, as healthy as he is, but they do return a lot of, you know, star power on offense. I believe all their top receivers, top running backs. So that certainly helps. But, you know, I do think there is an advantage to having guys with experience coming back that have been a part of the program. They're used to staying in the team hotel. It's the stuff that people probably don't think about that is the same to them versus new to others. Team hotel, team meals, meeting schedule. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that these guys have all done. They're all used to. So that's certainly an advantage for them. But at the same time, you know, we have experience too, on our defensive line, on our offensive line. Those guys have played in big games. Receivers have made big plays. So I do think it's a very evenly matched game. But you guys know my prediction, and we'll save that for the end. But it's going to be a great game. And Dan, I love how you said that you compared the two schools, Illinois in the Big Ten, Kansas in the Big 12. They're very similar programs. Third-year head coach, both fighting for that, you know, national spotlight. They're basketball schools, you know, historically. The football team are trying to make a comeback. So it is a huge game for both schools. And you know, I'm excited to watch it. One thing, one place I think where we can excel is our offense. I think our offense can put up some points against their defense. Their defensive coordinator, typically, you know, at least last year, he ran kind of the Lovie Smith, bend don't break philosophy. And they let up close to 36 points a game, which was one of the worst in college football. So going back to our, you know, hope and faith and confidence in Luke Altmyer, being able to dissect that defense and bring us down the field. You know, if we don't score at least 30 points, I don't think we win this game. And I think we're going to be able to do that against this team.
Do we want to get into our game predictions? Mikey, sounds like you have a bit of a shootout. Do you have a specific score in mind?
I do. Yes, I think we are going to come in, score 31. So I said we got to get to that 30-point mark. But I think it's going to be 31-24 Illinois. And I think Luke's going to have a big game. But my player of the game, sticking on offense, is Reggie Love. I think Reggie Love's going to come out and have a really good breakout game because we haven't really gotten that out of him. We've seen flashes. I know last year he backed up the best running back in the country. This year he's splitting carries with Josh McCray, but I think Reggie Love's going to come out, go for over 100 and two touchdowns.
I've got the cardiac kids making another appearance this week. I just can't. If the game's that close, I know Lance Leipold has won a lot, and he's established a culture similar to Brett Bielema in terms of similar, we touched on earlier, you know, you learn how not to lose football games. I know that Lance Leipold is of a similar mindset in terms of how he builds a program and how he develops guys. I just can't see the boys not winning. I'm going to go 34-33 Illini. One thing that I was missing a bit in terms of watching the game last week is that there was a lot of excitement and energy when on, you know, kickoff coverage or a couple of defensive plays, guys are getting hyped up. I'm waiting for someone. I'm going to go with Xavier Scott as my pick of the week because he's going to do like what Spoon did against Indiana, one of everyone's favorite clips in the pre-draft process or just Twitter in general, to show Spoon just being an absolute dog and laying that dude out. One of the first plays on defense against Indiana last year. I want something like that where there's just a tone setter and the guys are just forget about last week, forget about, you know, what they're, I don't want them to forget about the responsibilities, but forget about, you know, thinking so much. Just go out there, be aggressive, lay some wood, obviously play within the defense, but I'm looking for Xavier Scott to set the tone early and often.
All right. I'm going to go the other way. I think Friday Night Lights, first road test for Illinois. Kansas is a good team. I think the home crowd advantage will help them a little bit here. I have it a shootout, though, as well. I have it 35-31 Kansas. I think it's going to be a lot for this team to overcome. The defense has me a little concerned. Illinois' defense has me concerned, particularly outside of Miles Scott. Some of the secondary play, I thought, against Toledo needs to be stepped up quite a bit, and I think Jalen Daniels is a guy who can expose that. So I'm a little worried we're going to have trouble containing him. If he gets to the second level, he could house a couple deep runs. So I have Kansas coming out on top. I think Illinois does score a lot of points in this game. I have Isaiah Williams as my pick of the week. I think he has at least one touchdown over 60 yards. That'll be my specific stat of the week. I do think it's going to be a very entertaining game one way or another. I don't see this game being a blowout in any sort of way. To me, it's going to be a back and forth battle. I just think the home crowd, Jalen Daniels is kind of that X factor. And if he's full go, like it sounds like he will be, I just have a hard time seeing Illinois being able to overcome that. So it's going to be a close game. It's could go in our favor. I really hope it does, but I have a hard time picking Illinois winning this game. So I'm hedging a little bit emotionally by saying Kansas is going to win.
Well, I hope you're wrong, Dan, but
me too.
All good points that you've made. I will say that.
Me too. I'm the number one guy that hopes I'm wrong. Clip it.
Yes.
All right. Friday night, a little bit different. Friday Night Lights. Don't miss the game. If you think the game's Saturday, you're wrong. Friday night, 6:30 Central Time, ESPN2, national TV. Should be a good one. Weather looks like it'll be good, so tune in, and we'll be back after the game for a post-game recap. John, you said you're working on this film breakdown. There'll be more content to come, so be on the lookout for that on our social media pages. We're at The Field Pass. Thanks for listening, and as always, go Illini.